So in this section, text 46 to 53, are prayers that Satyabrata is offering to Matsyadev, the fish incarnation of the Lord. And he has promised him previously that he would instruct him. So now he's going to offer some prayers. The king said, this is the first one, text 46. By the grace of the Lord, those who have lost their self-knowledge since time immemorial, and who because of this ignorance are involved in a material conditional life full of miseries, they obtain the chance to meet the Lord's devotee. I accept that Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Supreme Spiritual Master. So, this is actually Krishna's true mercy upon a soul when he arranges or awards knowledge and instructions that will end someone's material life. And that Lord, he's accepting as his spiritual master. That's what he says here. Because when those who in the material world falsely identify with the body and therefore are entangled in their material life, which ultimately means so much suffering and frustration, disappointment. So by the grace of Krishna, he arranges to meet, the Lord arranges that he meets a devotees. So that Lord who makes the arrangement is the ultimate spiritual master. He is actually the spiritual master, that Supreme Lord. And all other spiritual masters are representatives of the Lord. Let's read Prabhupada's purport. Now remember, earlier I said there was an important point. Does anyone remember what that important point was? Yes.
That we always go through the door of our own desires.
We have to pass through our material desires to get to the spiritual world. So keep that in mind as we read what his prayers are. Here's Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the Supreme Spiritual Master. The Supreme Lord Krishna knows everything about the suffering of the conditioned soul, and therefore he appears in this material world, sometimes personally, sometimes by an incarnation, and sometimes by authorizing a living entity to act on his behalf. In all cases, however, he is the original Spiritual Master who enlightens the conditioned souls who are suffering in the material world. The Lord is always busy helping the conditioned souls in many ways. Therefore, he is addressed here as Paramo Guru Bhavan, the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts to spread Krishna consciousness, is also guided by the Supreme Lord to act properly in executing the Lord's orders. So he, the spiritual master, who is spreading Krishna consciousness, he is the representative of the Paramo Guru, the Supreme Lord, who is the ultimate Guru. So he represents him. Just like in the United Nations, one individual is the representative of a country. And when he votes yes, it's as if the country is voting yes, even though he's an individual. But because he's empowered by the country, he has that responsibility to vote on behalf of the country. So he's guided by the Supreme Lord. So just in the way that the ambassador is guided by the executive parts of the country to vote and act in a particular way. So Yet he's an individual, and yet he's different from the country. But yet he's none different in another sense. Such a person may appear to be an ordinary human being. So again, we think of the example of the ambassador to the UN. But because he acts on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spiritual Master, he is not to be neglected as ordinary, not to be dismissed thinking, oh, he said this, so what, he's ordinary. It is therefore said, acharya mam vijnaniyat, an acharya, a teacher who acts on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, should be understood to be as good as the Supreme Lord himself. Sakshadhari tvena samasta sastre uktastatava bhate vasadbi kintu prabhuya priyavatasya vande guru sri charanaravindam. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has advised that the spiritual master acting on the Supreme Lord's behalf must be worshipped as being as good as the Supreme Lord, for he is the Lord's most confidential servant in broadcasting the Lord's message for the benefit of the conditioned souls involved in the material world. So there's much can be said about Guru Tattva, about the Supreme Lord here, about the Guru and the representative of the Supreme Lord, but better to just stick to the point of the prayers, I think. But let us just say that he is not the Supreme Lord in the sense that he is all-powerful like the Lord, but he represents the Supreme Lord, and therefore the spiritual master is the Supreme Lord in that sense, and that the Supreme Lord accepts service to himself performed through the spiritual master because he's engaged in that confidential service of preaching and representing him. So the instruction of Sakshadhari means that we shouldn't mistake him for an ordinary person, because that will get us in more trouble. If we over-venerate, give him more veneration, seeing him as the Lord acting through him, that is the safest side to be in. Because yet he's a person, just like the deity. The form of the Lord, Krishna, Balaram, Radhashyama, Sundar, so many deities in Vrindavan, literally hundreds of thousands of deities. But Krishna agrees to accept worship through those forms, so they're not different from him. But yet they're made out of brass, they're made out of stone. So are they brass, are they stone, or are they God? Everyone knows that they're made out of brass, but to think that they're only made out of brass is offense, because then one is disrespecting the spiritual energy that works through that material energy. And after all, that material energy is also the Lord's energy, and for him it is not, it's spiritual. Just like the prison house, the prison, from the prisoner point of view, there's a big distinction between the prison and the wealth hospital department, from the citizen point of view, or from the prisoner's point of view. But from the government's point of view, they're both part of the energy of the government. They're both supported by the government. They're both maintained by the government. So from Krishna's point of view, from the spiritual point of view, from the ultimate point of view, the deity, that material energy, is spiritual energy, because it's his energy, so it's spiritual energy. So similarly, the spiritual master, he is carrying Krishna's Kripa Shakti, so that's what's seen. Yes, he's a human. But if we see him just as a human, that will get us, then we will never listen to him. So therefore we won't benefit from having the spiritual master. So therefore the instruction is to see him as Sakshad Hari, no different from Hari, the Supreme Lord. Next verse. So that first verse, what did it say? It said, the conditioned souls who suffer in the material world, the souls who transmigrate from one body to the next, by Krishna's grace, they get instructions on how to get out of the material world through Krishna's representative, the spiritual master, one spiritual master. Text 47. In hopes of becoming happy in the material world, the foolish conditioned soul performs fruitive activity. Activity meant to gain a specific selfish result, self-centered result. So to become happy in this material world, a conditioned soul performs fruitive activities. Foolish is inserted there because these don't actually fulfill our desire to be happy. The attempt is a promise, it's a dream. It's the advertisement for happiness, but the actual fulfillment never occurs. But by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from false desires for happiness. So this is what happens. So the first text says that one is in the material world and accepting the Lord as the spiritual master and the Lord or the devotee of the Lord as the spiritual master engages in us in devotional service. And this text says as the result of serving Krishna, the tendency and desire to enjoy separately, fruitively, it is vanquished from the heart. So those false desires or desires to get happiness where they are not, in the mirage of the desert of the material world where no water truly exists. So that is dissipated. So may that Supreme Spiritual Master cut the knot of false desires from the core of my heart. So it's there so tightly, this tendency to exploit, to enjoy the material world as if the material world is meant for me. And it's such a hard habit to break. We know we're insignificant. As we become older, we experience the frustrations of material life. We experience our body letting us down. It must happen. It must happen. And yet, this hard knot in the heart, tendency to enjoy, remains very firmly ensconced there. So by performing devotional service to the Lord, serving Him with devotion, that is removed. It's dissipated. The third of these verses, text 48. One who wants to be free of material entanglements should take up the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up the contamination of ignorance involving pious and impious activities. So on one hand, we have to give up, we have to walk through that gate. We have to give up material desires, the self-centered desires, the sensuous desires. We have to give that up. And on the other hand, what we have to do is serve the Lord. Because what? We have to do something. So if we're not serving Krishna or making the attempt to serve Krishna, we're making the attempt to enjoy in the material world. So one who wants to become free from material entanglement should take to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up the contamination of ignorance. And what is the contamination of ignorance? It involves pious and impious activities, good ways and bad ways that are all self-centered. Good and bad meaning relative to the material world, within the material world. Thus, by doing this, by walking through this gate, giving up the desire to exploit and enjoy matter and turning to Krishna's service, one regains his original identity, his true identity, his sarup as a servant. Just, and here's an example, just as a block of gold or silver sheds all dirt and becomes purified when treated with fire, may that inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead become our spiritual master who we should serve. May that Lord become our our spiritual master, for he is the original spiritual master of all other spiritual masters. So when we're dealing with our spiritual master, we are dealing with him, but we're not only dealing with him, we're dealing with Krishna acting through him. So we're dealing with, just like when someone attacks, if someone kidnaps an ambassador to a country, so is he kidnapping an individual only? No, he's insulting the country too, the whole country. You're dealing with more than the individual when you deal with the ambassador. So similarly, when we deal with empowered personalities, we're dealing with more than an individual. We're dealing with Krishna too. So Satyavrata is trying, he wants the Lord to help him move from being in the material energy to freeing himself from the material energy and becoming situated in his constitutional natural position. We'll read the final purport and the purport to 48. Even though we may not have the fortune to contact the Supreme Lord personally, the Lord's representative is as good as the Lord himself, because such a representative does not say anything unless it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore gives a definition of Guru. Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upades. Amara gyai guru hai tari des. The bona fide Guru is he who advises his disciples exactly in accordance with the principles spoken by Krishna. The bona fide Guru is he who has accepted, who has accepted Krishna as Guru. This is the Guru Parampara system. The original Guru is Vyasadeva, because he is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein everything spoken relates to Krishna. Therefore, Guru Puja is known as Vyas Puja. In the final analysis, the original Guru is Krishna. His disciple is Narada, whose disciple is Vyas, and in this way we gradually come in touch with the Guru Parampara. One cannot become a guru if he does not know what the personality of Godhead or his incarnation wants. The mission of the guru is the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So the Prabhupada's point here is that to serve Krishna means to serve the guru means to serve Krishna. The guru carries the desire of Krishna. He himself is engaged in serving Krishna, and he carries that, and he instructs the disciples to in such a way, that they please Krishna. And where has he learned that? He's learned that from his guru and Shastra. So this, going back to the verse itself, one who wants to be free from material entanglement should take to the service of the Supreme Personality of God and give up the contamination of ignorance. So to give up the petty materialistic endeavors, petty, great as they may appear, they're petty because compared to eternity, they're completely insignificant. Like children fighting over a toy. You know, who's right, who's wrong? It doesn't make any difference. It's petty, insignificant. And they'll forget it in time. So give up petty things, both on the pious and impious level, and serve the Lord. And then Prabhupada, and what we read of the purport, explains that how do we know how to serve the Lord? Through the spiritual master who carries specifically how to please him. He carries the desire of the Lord. So what is the desire of Krishna? Prabhupada makes the point here. Is yari deka tarika Krishna Pradesh for preaching, to change the very fabric of contemporary so-called civilization, as Prabhupada tended to call it, from nonsensical and based on whimsy and pettiness to something deep, which will be beneficial for people. Next text. 49. Neither all the demigods, nor the so-called gurus, nor all other people, either independently or together, can offer mercy that equals even 1/10,000th of yours, O Lord. Therefore, I wish to take shelter of your lotus feet. Because everyone else, their acts of kindness are temporary and have to do with the body and trying to become satisfied within the material world. And the mercy of Krishna is something on a completely different level. And what is that level? It is freeing someone from material entanglement, bringing them to the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, which is an eternal situation. So that's a difference, the difference. We'll read Prabhupada's purport. It is said, Kamastaista ritajnana prapadyante anyadevata. Where is it said that? The book? Bhagavad Gita, chapter, perhaps the 9th chapter, maybe you can look. 720. Those who are ritigyan, have little knowledge, they surrender to demigods to get something. They want something, a business deal with higher personalities, more powerful personalities. They worship, they serve, but their desire is to get something. People in general, being motivated by material desires, worship the demigods to get fruit of results very quickly. People generally do not become devotees of Lord Vishnu, since Lord Vishnu never becomes the order supplier of his devotee, doesn't as easily fulfill material desires. Lord Vishnu does not give a devotee benedictions that will create a further demand for benedictions, further material desires. By worshiping the demigods, one may get results. But, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, antavatu phalam tesham tadbhavad alpamedasam. It is done by people who are alpamedasam, who have little intelligence. Whatever great benedictions one may achieve from the demigods are all temporary. Because the demigods themselves are temporary, their benedictions are also temporary and have no permanent value. Those who aspire for such benedictions have a poor fund of knowledge, tadbhavat yalpamedasam. The benedictions of Lord Vishnu are different. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, one can be completely freed from material contamination and go back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, it is very rare that one has that desire and not have a material desire. And therefore, there are less devotees of the Supreme Lord. Because this is what it means to be a devotee of the Supreme Lord. It is that one's desire, and this is a non-sectarian concept. One's desire is to please Him. It is not to take from Him. It is to please Him. He is in the center. Such a religion is actually religion. Other things are not actually religion. But the benedictions of Lord Vishnu are different. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, one can be completely freed from material contamination and go back home, back to Godhead. People want to keep their material contamination and still go back home, back to Godhead, but we can't. We can't. Therefore, the benedictions offered by the demigods cannot compare to even 1/10,000th of the Lord benedictions. The results are the difference between how many temporaries does it take before it adds up to eternity. They can't compare. You can multiply zero by any type of number and you still get zero. And how do you multiply, how many times you have to multiply a finite number before you get infinity? Or divide something by infinity. One should not therefore try to attain benedictions from the demigods or false gurus. One should aspire only for the benedictions offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Savadamam prityaja mamekam sharanam raja ham tvam sava papebhyo mokshasami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. You become mine. You become mine and I will become yours. What will compare to that? How many material things will it take before you understand that there's nothing in the material world that will satisfy the soul, to satisfy us, the soul? So do not fear. Just abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. This is the greatest benediction, that we should give ourselves to Krishna. That is a benediction on the eternal platform. And that's what Satyavrata is saying. Text 50. As a blind man, so he's criticizing here the material desires and trying to get our material desires made or met in either pious or impious ways, or going to demigods, or following the path, the attempt to become satisfied on the material level. These are all condemned. Why are they being condemned? Because you cannot take them to the spiritual world. You cannot have both. You cannot pour water on the fire and have it blaze simultaneously. You cannot be in want to become materially satisfied and at the same time want to become a pure soul, a pure servant of Krishna. The two are in opposition. So he's decrying and he's asking the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Spiritual Master, which reflects down to all spiritual masters, to cut the knot of his material desires by engaging him in devotional service in such a way that these material desires will become vanquished, they'll become insignificant, they will be evaporated. Therefore, for this purpose, to get this kind of benediction, a full spiritual desire taking birth in the heart and full spiritual activity in which one can manifest his desire to love and serve Krishna. He's asking for that from the Supreme Spiritual Master, the Lord. 50. As a blind man, being unable to see, accepts another blind man as his leader. People who do not know the goal of life accept someone as a guru who is a rascal and a fool. But we are interested in self-realization. Therefore, we accept you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as our spiritual master. For you are able to see in all directions and are omniscient like the sun. Prabhupada's purport. So don't, in other words, he's saying, let's not accept as a guide a blind man. Because what happens when you're following a blind man, because we're already blind, and if we follow someone who's blind, we end up, where do we end up?
In a ditch.
In a ditch. Or
blind well.
Or in a well, a blind well, or walking in front of a truck, or anyway, in difficulty, cannot come to good. So he's saying, no, I don't, therefore we're not accepting that. We don't want things from materialistic people, because materialistic people, by virtue of their being materialistic, are by definition blind. Because they don't see. What the blind person cannot see. What doesn't the materialistic person see? Because his vision is on the temporary, and he doesn't see many things. He doesn't see that his life is waning. He doesn't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All he sees is, I want, I want, I want, I want. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So here, in contrary to that, a blind person, he's saying, we're accepting you, O Lord, as our spiritual master, for you are able to see in all directions. You are omniscient. Your energy goes everywhere, as does the sun. Purport. The conditioned soul, being wrapped in ignorance and therefore not knowing the goal of life, accepts a guru who can juggle words and make some display of magic that is wonderful to a fool. Sometimes a foolish person accepts someone as a guru because he can manufacture a small quantity of gold by mystic yogic power. Because such a disciple has a poor fund of knowledge, in other words, he doesn't know things in the proper perspective. He cannot judge whether the manufacture of gold is the criterion for a guru. Why should one not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, from whom unlimited numbers of gold mines come into being? So he's the source of all gold. So Prabhupada is speaking of someone in particular who is still alive, who became, he used to make gold or ash, and everyone would say, oh, oh, and he would say, I'm God, and people would follow him, etc. So this producing gold or ash or awarding material desires, and there's a famous, not very famous really, but there's a temple on the road to Mathura, that's a big temple that was being built during Srila Prabhupada's time, and there was some, the fellow was called Pago Baba. Pago means?
Fool.
Pago Baba. And his expertise was being able to tell which way the stock market was going to go. So imagine how many followers he had. Because that's what people want. And they gave him so much donations and things like that. He was very popular, very successful. And he was a chain smoker. And, you know. But this is what materialistic people, where they go for shelter, and who amongst them is going to be interested in hearing the truth? That, as Prabhupada would say, rascal, fool, this is, you know, foolish, rascaldom, and things like that. Very few people want to hear that. Rather, they want someone to say, very, very good, whatever you want is okay. You're not a tight, you're a tiger, you should, like a tiger, you can eat whatever meat you want, you can do whatever you want, you can drink this, you can smoke that, you can do anything you want, it's okay. And here's how, which stock is going up next. That's what people generally want. But not Satyavrata, and not us. But in one sense, we're even more unfortunate and foolish than the people who don't know any better. That's what Narottama Das Thakur says. Janiya Shunya Bishakainu. That I don't truly devote myself to the Lord service. Radha Krishna, Nabhajiya. I don't worship truly. Instead, even though I know better, Suni, even though I've heard, Jani, even though I know, Bisha Kainu, I drink poison of materialistic activities, even though I know better. So who is most unfortunate? So Prabhupada he's speaking very philosophic. He's decrying false gurus here. Therefore, why should one accept a magician who can manufacture only a small portion of gold? Such gurus are accepted by those who are blind, not knowing the goal of life. Maharaj Satyavrata, however, knew the goal of life. He knew the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he accepted the Lord as his guru. Either the Supreme Lord or his representative can become guru. The Lord says, Mameva ye prapadyante mayame tantarantite. One can get relief from the clutches of Maya as soon as he surrenders unto me. Therefore, it is the Guru's business to instruct his disciple to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he wants relief from the material clutches. This is the symptom of a Guru. The same principle was instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Again, Prabhupada's making the point. Yare deka tarika krishnupadesh. In other words, one is advised not to accept a guru who does not follow the path of instruction given by the Lord, which Prabhupada is explaining, which will please Mahaprabhu. Please him, please Mahaprabhu, is preaching. And help the poor souls of this world who are suffering due to lack of knowledge, and they don't know really which way to go to get relief from the suffering, and they go in the wrong way, naturally, because naturally, unless you really hear things in the proper perspective, naturally people are only interested in sense gratification because this is the material world. So that's what they think is the problem is, I don't have enough of this, I don't have enough of this, this person has more than me, I never had this in my life. So Shastra's saying, no, get out. And that's what Krishna wishes for us, and that's what the representative of Krishna wishes for us. And to help others get out, is that, which is what preaching is, basically, is also very helpful for oneself. So text 51. So don't follow foolish persons. So more on this point. A materialistic so-called guru instructs his materialistic disciples about economic development and sense gratification, and because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge that is eternal, and the intelligent person receiving such knowledge is quickly situated in his original constitutional position. So not to go that way, but to go this way, towards the eternal. And it's interesting, if we think of the desires that we have, that we hold within our heart and we wish to enjoy in the material world that holds us back, think of them in relationship to Satyavrata's position of what is important and what is not important. Why is he so, it's easy for him in one sense to see what, to differentiate between which is truly important and what is truly unimportant, because he's seen the whole universe, practically speaking, become devastated in our short lifespan. We will see many things, many devastations. We'll see devastations of friends, of dear family members, our grandparents, but he's, and we tend to forget all those as we move up in the line. But Satyabrata has seen everything devastated, and when everything is devastated, there's a sense of the uselessness of trying to attain anything in the material world that must come to the heart. It must enter the heart if anyone has any sense at all. It must enter the heart. Of course, we push it away after we go to the funeral. You know, we're very grave there. And then we feel very renounced, and then in 10 minutes we forget everything. But that is Krishna warning us that our time is coming and we should not forget. 51. The purport here. So-called gurus, so there's a contrast between so-called gurus who give material instruction and real gurus who give instruction to a receptive, intelligent person, quickly becomes a servant. So-called gurus instruct their disciples for the sake of material profit. Some gurus advise that one meditate in such a way that his intelligence will increase in regard to keeping his body fit for sense gratification. Another guru advises that sex is the ultimate goal of life and that one should therefore engage in sex to the best of his ability. These are the instructions of foolish gurus. In other words, because of the instructions of a foolish guru, one remains perpetually in material existence and suffers its tribulations. But if one is intelligent enough to take instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita, or the Sankhya philosophy of Kapiladeva, which is in Canto 3, the end of Canto 3 of Bhagavatam, one can very soon attain liberation and be situated in its original position of spiritual life. The words Nijapadam are significant. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the birthright to a position in Vaikuntha Loka, or the spiritual world, where there is no anxiety. Therefore, one should follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Taktvideham punarjanma naitima meti suarjana. After giving up one's body, one will return home back to Godhead. The Lord lives in the spiritual world in his original personality, and a devotee who follows the instructions of the Lord approaches him, mam eti. As a spiritual person, such a devotee returns to the personality of Godhead and plays and dances with him. That is the ultimate goal of life. Our goal should not be on the material level. Satyabrata is saying, O Lord, please instruct me and engage me in such a way that these material, petty, foolish desires that are not innocent, but rather keep me entrapped in the material world, that these will be removed from my heart. And rather, I shall go to the spiritual world and be with Krishna. Those are the kind of instructions that we need. And Prabhupada is giving, directly stating the importance of preaching in relationship to this. 52. My Lord, you are the supreme well-wishing friend of everyone, and dearmost friend, the controller, the supersoul, the supreme instructor, and the giver of supreme knowledge and the fulfillment of all desires. But although you are within the heart, the foolish, because of lusty desires in the heart, cannot understand you. So this is why we can't see Krishna. This is why we can't hear Krishna. It is like a radio. Our consciousness is like a radio that is not finely tuned. And it's getting many channels at once, many radio stations at once. And although Krishna wishes to speak to us, our consciousness is not clear enough to hear him. Our mind is not quieted enough to listen. So although Krishna is there and he wishes to help us, we are not able to take his help due to the lusty, passionate material desires that fill our hearts. So here again, we can see that what these prayers are talking about of him, he's saying, he's talking about surrender in the frame of getting instructions from the Supreme Lord in such a way that the material desires in the heart will be vanquished for the purpose of attaining spiritual eternal benefit. So that's the thrust of his prayers to Matsya. And of course, we're not going to be able to enter into the most mysterious 10th canto if our heart is full of material desires. Here's Prabhupada's purport to 52. Herein the reason for foolishness is described. Because the conditioned soul in this material world is full of materialistic lusty desires, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhase Arjuna Teshyate. It is because of this foolishness that one cannot take instructions from the Lord, although the Lord is ready to instruct everyone, both externally and internally. The Lord says, Dadami buddhi ogam tam yena mam upayanti te. In other words, the Lord can give instructions on devotional service by which one can return home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, however, people do not take this devotional service. The Lord, being situated in everyone's heart, can give one complete instructions on going back to Godhead. But because of lusty desires, one engages himself in materialistic activities and does not render service to the Lord. Therefore, one is bereft of the value of the Lord's instructions. By mental speculation, one can understand that one is not the body, but a spirit soul. But unless one engages in devotional service, that means by the power of one's intelligence, one can understand that one is not this body, the body that we inhabit, that we are consciousness, or rather, you know, that's what one will perceive oneself as, is consciousness, through the power of one's intelligence, basically by the power of just stopping the mind, slowing down the mind. But unless one engages in devotional service, the real purpose of life is never fulfilled, which is to awaken our relationship with Krishna. The real purpose of life is to go back home, back to Godhead, and live with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dance with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and eat with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are different items of ananda, spiritual happiness, and spiritual variegatedness. Even though one may come to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta and understand his spiritual identity by speculative knowledge, one cannot enjoy spiritual life without understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is indicated here by the words abhishta siddhi. One can fulfill the ultimate goal of life only by engaging in devotional service to the Lord. Then the Lord will give one proper instructions on how to go back home, back to Godhead. And his final prayer. O Supreme Lord, for self-realization, I surrender to you. It means all the material desires which cloud my vision, which captivate my consciousness, please remove them through engaging me and through transcendental knowledge, and I surrender unto you. That is the process of self-realization. Who are worshipped by the demigods as the supreme controller of everything. By your instructions, exposing life's purpose, kindly cut the knot from the core of my heart and let me know the destination of my life. Purport. Sometimes it is argued that people do not know who is a spiritual master, and that finding a spiritual master from whom to get enlightenment in regard to the destination of life is very difficult. To answer all these questions, King Satyavrata shows us the way to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the real spiritual master. The Supreme Lord has given full directions in Bhagavad Gita about how to deal with everything in this material world and how to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, one should not be misled by so-called gurus who are rascals and fools. Rather, one should directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the guru or instructor. It is difficult, however, to understand Bhagavad Gita without the help of the guru. Therefore, the guru appears in the parampara system. In Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead recommends Tadbhidi paripatena paripajena sevaya upadek shanti te gyanam gyaninas tatvadarshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Krishna directly instructed Arjuna. Arjuna is therefore a tatvadarshi or guru. Arjuna accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Similarly, following in the footsteps of Sri Arjuna, who is a personal devotee of the Lord, one should accept the supremacy of Lord Krishna as supported by Vyas, Devala, Asita, Narada, and later by the Acharyas Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Nimbarka, and Vishnuswami, and still later by the greatest Acharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Where then is the difficulty in finding a guru? If one is sincere, he can find the guru and learn everything. One should take lessons from the guru and find out the goal of life. Maharaj Satyavrata, therefore, shows us the way of the Mahajan. Mahajano yenagata sapanta. One should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dasavatara, and learn from him about the spiritual world and the goal of life. So this is Prabhupada's bringing us to the position of surrender to the Lord, and surrender to the Lord is none different from surrendering to his representative. Let's continue and complete the chapter in the canto. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Satyavrata Muni had thus prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a fish, the Lord, while moving in the water of inundation, explained to him the absolute truth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thus explained to King Satyavrata the spiritual science known as Sankhya Yoga, the science by which one distinguishes between matter and spirit. In other words, Bhakti Yoga. So that's what Sankhya comes to, as we have learned from Kapila Muni. along with the instructions contained in the Puranas, the old histories, and the Samhitas. The Lord explained Himself and all these literatures. Atma Guhyam Asheshita. He explained all the mysteries of self-realization, including Asheshita, all the branches of everything. Sankhya Yoga. While sitting in the boat, King Satyavrata, accompanied by the great saintly persons, listened to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in regard to self-realization. These instructions were all from the eternal Vedic literatures, Brahma. Thus the king and sages had no doubt about the absolute truth. At the end of the last inundation, during the period of Swayambhuva Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead killed the demon named Hayagriva and delivered all the Vedic literatures to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleeping. So that was in the first of the different incarnations of Matsya that were described. This one, however, in the Chakshusha Manu was when he instructed Satyavrata Muni. King Satyavrata was illuminated with all Vedic knowledge by the mercy of Lord Vishnu. And in this period, he has now taken his birth as Vaivaswata Manu, the son of the sun god. This story concerning, and here's the Shruti Phala, the results that come from hearing this, because you have all heard this very attentively. This story concerning the great king Satyavrata and the fish incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is a great transcendental narration. Anyone who hears it is delivered from the reactions of sinful life. One who narrates this description of the Matsya incarnation, so it's not only those who hear it who get something, and King Satyavrata, and this of course is why we like to give classes here, we're greedy, will certainly have all his ambitions fulfilled, and he will undoubtedly return home back to Godhead. So, does anyone want to give this class tomorrow, sitting here? And it ends over here, the last text. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who pretended to be a gigantic fish, who restored the Vedic literature to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleep, and who explained the essence of Vedic literature to King Satyavrata and the great saintly persons. Isn't it interesting how Prabhupada spoke about preaching is how to please Krishna? Preaching and teaching, they're the same, really. Now, of the two benedictions that were given, those who hear, what do you get if you hear this narration? And what do you get if you narrate it? Yeah. So who's getting more? So who gets, so just generalize this, and this is why preaching is so wonderful. See, because when you preach, when you teach, you have to hear also. Everyone else can let their minds wander, make believe they're paying attention, go to sleep. But the person who's speaking, he has to listen. So he hears also. So this is the great secret of teaching. And that is, that the teacher learns more than anyone else when he teaches. Raise your hand if you've ever taught. Is this true or not true? It's true. So therefore, we teach, we preach Krishna consciousness, especially Krishna consciousness, because it's so beneficial for others, but most it's beneficial for us too. We benefit so much. So, okay, then the next question is, well, you know, Bharijan, you know, you're a teacher. My family members are teachers. You know, my astrological chart shows me as a teacher. And, you know, maybe I'm not like that. I can't preach. I can't teach. Something like that. We could think like that. But it is not in any material quality that gives us the opportunity to preach or teach. And Prabhupada explained this one time. He said, if you just speak what you truly realize, What you actually understand. Speak your realization, he said. What you really, really know, that will have power. And then he said, if all you can say is, oh, I like these Hare Krishna people, they're good people. I mean, looking at it from the point of view of the Bhagavatam, that's not a very deep, profound realization. But Prabhupada said, if that's your realization, just say that, and it will have power. And then you're doing what you can. We do what we can. And that's all we can do. We just do the best we can. We pray to Krishna to help us. We do our part. When we're teaching a class, we put in our time to study, we prepare. But ultimately, when you sit down to give a class, you find yourself completely empty. You have nothing to say to anyone. No realizations or anything. And then you pray for help. And that's where the excitement comes. That's where you really learn that Krishna's actually, he helps. And to be instrumental for Krishna, for God, this satisfies us. This is what's satisfying. To be a servant, to be instrumental, to be used. In the world, everyone is trying to exploit to be masters. But a devotee just wants to be used. Instrumental in one way or another. Either by our words, by our intelligence, by our money, or by our... There was a fourth one, I think, Prabhupada told me that's a verse. It wasn't. By our words, intelligence, money, or our life. That was the fourth one. Somehow or another, try to do something to please Krishna. And then do that as a servant. And that's another important key in teaching, preaching. Don't do it, yes, I will be a teacher, I will be a master, I will... Just do it as a servant, as Prabhupada was saying, to please Mahaprabhu, to please your spiritual master. And just remain always, forever in that position. Never be ambitious to become more than a servant. Even Prabhupada, one time, one devotee wrote Prabhupada a letter, and in that letter a disciple of Prabhupada, he put a poem. And in the poem, the refrain, the last line was always, oh, please accept this humble devotee. And Prabhupada replied by saying, nice poem, but don't say, please accept your humble devotee. Please say, please accept your humble servant. Don't even try to be a devotee. Just try to be a servant. We'll get into trouble with any other concept. We'll twist it around and turn it upside down. Just be a servant. Here in this world, in Goloka Vrindavan, and we'll find out, most amazingly, we'll find out that we can, not that I'm finding this out so quickly because I have a hard time trying to be continuously being a servant. But we'll find out that Krishna's here with us, helping us. And wherever Krishna is, it's Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And we just have to deepen and deepen our love and devotion and surrender by which we make our offerings. So here is Prabhupada's comment here, and then he'll just give a comment at the end too. Because this is the end of the eighth canto. And it's interesting to note the date when he did this. Here is a summary of Satyabrata's meeting with the fish incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu's purpose was to take back all the Vedic literatures from the demon Hayagriva and restore them to Lord Brahma. Incidentally, by his causeless mercy, the Lord spoke with Satyavrata. The word Satyavratanam is significant because it indicates that those on the level of Satyavrata can take knowledge from the Vedas delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is spoken by the Supreme Lord is accepted as Veda. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vedantakrit, Vedavit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the compiler of all Vedic knowledge, and he knows the purport of the Vedas. Therefore, anyone who takes knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or from Bhagavad Gita as it is, knows the purpose of the Vedas. Vedas chasavar ahameva vedyo. One cannot understand Vedic knowledge from the Veda Vada Ratas, who read the Vedas and misconstrue their subject matter. One has to know the Vedas from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 24th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. And Prabhupada has a concluding comment at the end of the 8th canto. This commentation has been finished in our New Delhi Center today, the 1st of September, 1976, the day of Radhastami, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of the God of Godhead and the Acharyas, not by my own strength, but by their mercy, their kindness, their grace. Srila Narottama Das Thakur says, Tandera Sanada Sevi Bhakta Sanevas Janame Janame Hoy Eya Bilas. I am attempting to present Srimad Bhagavatam in the English language by the order of my spiritual master. So Prabhupada is placing himself as a disciple and a servant. Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And by his grace, the work of translation is gradually progressing, and the European and American devotees who have joined the Krishna consciousness movement are helping me considerably. We have expectations of finishing the great task before my passing away. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, the end of the 8th canto. So this was September 1976, and as we know, Srila Prabhupada passed away in November, over a little more than a year later, in 1977. So he completed up to the end of the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, and then his disciples finished it. So we have, Prabhupada had his expectations, we have our plans, we have our desires in service, and ultimately it's not our plans or expectations, our desires that happen, it's what Krishna desires happen. So why Krishna took Prabhupada, we can guess, we can say this, we can say that. We can say that it's to be, Prabhupada was already over 80, even in the early 70s, he was saying, I could leave at any time. In the 60s, he was saying that. He had already suffered 2 heart attacks. He was frail in so many ways. But his spirit, his desire to serve and preach was indomitable. It was incredible. He was blazing continuously with this. So when Krishna said, it's time to go, and he'll say that to all of us at one point or another, he'll say, it's time to go, you have to leave now. But I don't want to, I still want to do this, I still want to do that, I want to finish this, I want to teach this, I want to build my house, I want to who knows what, we have all our I wants. And then Krishna says, I'm sorry, it's time to go. But, sorry, it's time to go. Oh, you can come back for a while, okay. And then what can we do? So we want to make sure we get as, well, with the time that we do have, we want to do as much as we can. Do as much as we can, what I mean by that is make whatever offerings that we can for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. And at the same time, become worthy as we can. 2 things. Serving and being worthy to serve, becoming purified. If we just try to serve and don't try to become purified and develop love, our service will not work. If we give up the hearing and chanting process, we will not survive. The creeper of our devotion will wither And Prabhupada explained that if we do that, even in the name of serving, so much to do, so much to do, it is, we're giving it up, hearing and chanting by it because of offense. So we should become purified, we should hear and chant, and whatever service, according to who we are, whatever our capacity is. Some people, what was Prabhupada's capacity? God, inconceivable. What is our capacity? Just barely existing, struggling to make an offering of a leaf or fruit. So, but whatever situation we're in, regardless, we just accept it. Don't try to change the externals. Try to change the internals. And then say, okay, Krishna, how can I serve you? Please engage me in your service, and then see what we can do. Based on the internal desire to make offerings, we should make our offerings. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
It seems to me that actually there are three pralaya in the discussion. Because I was looking at the verse 37, it says this particular devastation actually took place not during the night of Brahma,
yes,
but during the day
of Shakshusha Manu.
Shakshusha Manu, that's one. As you know, there are 14 Manus, and in that purport, Srila Prabhupada calls Vijayanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Yes, I noted that.
And he mentions that Agastya Muni cursed Sarangva Manu. During the time of Svayamvara Manu, a devastation took place.
Yeah.
That's true. But if you go to verse 7, it says there, O King Parikshit, at the end of the past millennium, at the end of Brahma's day,
that's usually what Prabhupada had said, as far as I remember correctly, because I looked in Lago Bhagavatamrita.
Yes.
So there's one at the end of Svayambhuva Manu. That's the typical one at the end of Svayambhuva Manu's period of life.
Yes.
And then there is one in the middle of Chakshusha's, because of a curse, he took a nap,
yes,
became tired. So that's basically what it is, I think.
Okay.
But also it says in Lago Bhagavatamrita that there are 14 incarnations of Matsya, not only two. So, and then Prabhupada said also in that one of the last purports that he seemed to combine the two into one Matsya.
Mm-hmm.
He instructed the next one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When I was younger, I loved to work out all these things. Now, my taste has changed. Any other questions or comments?
Before, in before class, we talked about the proportionality.
Personality of Krishna?
Proportionality.
Proportionality. Before class.
In the class.
Of the previous. How he reciprocates proportionally.
This is my internal question.
Internal or eternal? No, I meant that seriously. Which I didn't quite. Internal?
Internal.
Yes.
And when I worship Krishna, I tend sometimes to worship him with the mood that I worship him and I want to know things about him because I want him to do the same thing for me, to know about me, to please me, to know him.
Yeah, mind your own business. Same point. You do your part. Don't worry so much about his part, if he's doing his part well enough. Do you think that he doesn't know you?
No, but
what would it take for you to become...
Maybe this is actually good.
Okay. What would it take for you to be convinced that he's actually aware of you and loves you?
I would need to get whatever I want immediately.
Is that all? But I will suggest something, and you can tell me if it's true. He's already let you know so many times that he's aware of you, he knows you, and loves you. And still, that hasn't been enough to convince you. So, but I'm not teasing you, because I go through the same things too. I'm not criticizing you in any way. So it takes something different from your experience to convince you. Until you get enough experience where you just trust it already. It's happened so many times that even though my mind, because that's where the doubt is arising, in your mind. So at some point you're going to have to tell your mind to be quiet. Because it will always, forever, be putting forward these doubts, which are contrary to what your experience is. You follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So at some point, you have to tell your mind to be quiet. And sometimes you have to tell it very strongly. I don't want to hear what you have to say. And it will continue. But still.
What about the statement I sometimes hear that we must act the way that the Lord will notice us, not that we will see Krishna. That He will see us, but not we Krishna.
What about it?
Well, in this
sense, so that's what I'm saying. Do your part. Your part is to act in such a way that He will be pleased. That's the point of that. Don't try to do His part, but do your part. If you want Him with you all the time, even though you're not qualified, just get a parakeet or a bird or a dog or something like that, because you want a pet. You don't want the Supreme Lord. I mean to say that this kind of desire sometimes is springing from the material platform as opposed to a deep, full spiritual desire to be with Krishna. I don't mean to minimize it in one sense, but this kind of thing usually springs from the psychological platform. Follow what I mean? A material psychological need as opposed to a deep spiritual need to be with Krishna all the time. And if we have that spiritual need, we will be with Him all the time. But the problem isn't that we have the spiritual need and He's not reciprocating. The problem is we don't have the spiritual need to be with Krishna. But because Krishna is Bhava Grahi Janardana, He'll take the essence of that and He'll reciprocate with you in a wonderful way, despite the fact that it's maybe you have some material elements to it. Because you're giving it to Krishna. You're pointing it to Krishna. Do you follow what I'm saying? So he's taking care of you. How could you be in Vrindavan if He's not taking care of you, giving you some special treatment just for you? You think it's easy to come here? How many months of?
5, 4.5.
How long did you have to serve Mother Parvati before you lived in Vrindavan for 4.5 months straight? I don't know why he's so kind to him. I'm going to write him and send him an email. But I don't know his address. Do you think Vrindavan is an ordinary place? What do you think?
No, I think it is very special. And I also think that I will, when I will have to leave, that I will understand more how special it is.
Don't talk about leaving. And your guru ordered you to come here.
Many times he said that I'm supposed to study, but I said, no, I don't want. But I ended studying.
So lucky. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes, Paul.
Just wondering, Shri Prabhupada is saying he was in New Delhi temple. Do you know what place it was? I hope it's not a stupid question.
Center.
Excuse me?
Center.
Probably Lajpatnagar. Probably. I think 74 was Lajpatnagar. But someone knows the history of ISKCON India can tell you that.
74 was something in Vietnam. That's when I came
in. I was there. Yeah, and I know where that is too, near the airport. At 74, I was, the beginning of 74, I saw the Radhapartasati at Lajpatnagar. But this is 76, I don't know where they were at 76. But we know where they are now. But you could find this out, it's just history. You could ask Tejas Prabhu. We have 4 minutes. Okay, 3.5. No, 4.5. Sure, but not a long answer. Not particularly. I mean, but because it was directed towards people who, towards in a philosophical way, we could talk about it. But I don't like things that could be construed politically, questions. And this one has, because when you travel from temple to temple, sometimes people will ask you a question that's based on the class in philosophy, but it has to do with, they're thinking of some particular circumstance in this particular temple or in their mind. But you're not privy to... But it's pretty broad, the question. Though,
yeah,
I mean, it's not really focused. Mm-hmm. See, another problem is that ISKCON has its history that isn't always very happy to speak about, and where what, and if you talk about a philosophical point or that you should always just simply follow your guru no matter what he does and not judge him. And then naturally, as soon as you say that, someone will say, but what happened if this happened to this guru at one time? Am I supposed to have just accepted what they said? So it becomes, when you deal with the philosophy and try, the philosophy brought down to a practical point has to be done on a very in a specific way with specific individuals. So this is, it's an interesting mixture, the way you asked it, of philosophical and practical. So whatever, however you answer it, it can upset different people. If you talk too much on the practical level, you get people who on the philosophical level. But the point the Prabhupada once said about someone, about like a temple authority, you were correct for following him, and then you have. Correct for not following them after. As long as they're following principles, then of course you have to follow. And if you're not, and if say sometimes spiritual masters have so many disciples, it's not possible for them to, Prabhupada, it wasn't possible for him to deal with everyone personally everyone could come and sit and talk with him and tell him what's going on with their life, and I have this problem, and I wrote you this letter, and he didn't do that. He couldn't do that because he had so many, and we were, as disciples, we were instructed not to write him, basically. Only like the temple leaders or temple presidents would write him. But that was practical reality. But yet everyone felt his mercy in different ways. So if we're in a situation where our spiritual master, this is one of the points you covered, not all of them, because what you said was very, very broad. If we're in a situation where we can't get the kind of association with our spiritual master that we would like, or that's practical, and then but we remain very, and he's bona fide, and he's serving his spiritual master properly, then by his mercy and by Prabhupada's mercy, Krishna will make another arrangement to take care of you. It was like Prabhupada said, the book is there too. Because it's so broad, you know, that there's so many fine things, and if you don't discriminate between one part and another part, or what you were thinking of when you were asking it, different people who hear the answer will only hear what they want to hear. Yeah, you want this?
Chastisement?
See, but it's more complicated than that, because he neglected what Sukracharya said, who was his spiritual master.
Yeah, but Sukracharya is so great, because he was rejecting Vishnu.
But then someone will say,
still was cursed.
So, in other words, it's complicated. Maybe at another time, when there's more time, and it's really important to get it really, to get it a little clearer what exactly the point you want to ask, or otherwise you have to be satisfied with a general answer. I think it's a valid comment. And also, and the way you put it, though, also in the question, it was sort of making one gear an answer in a particular way. You said, if the spiritual master doesn't give us instructions that make us feel good, he doesn't... that's not the spiritual master's job, is to make you feel good on the false ego level. He's supposed to shake you. Guru means heavy. Literally means heavy. It's supposed to crack the false ego. So if your false ego is cracked, it's not like it feels good. It feels terrible. But that's his service to do that. So I think that was actually the real point that you wanted to make. Yes. That's a guru's business, is to bring us out of this false conception that we're our body and our mind, and fix us as a servant. And everything isn't going to make sense to us from the material point of view. It just can't. And we'll tend to want to judge and compare, and only if I'd done this and things like that. Yes, because to have the false ego shaken up and cracked doesn't feel good. It's not pleasant. What feels good is if someone pets our false ego and says, "You're so wonderful. You've done this wonderful service. You're such a great devotee. So wonderful. So intelligent." That feels good, but that doesn't help our spiritual life. So what do we want? Afterwards. If you can take shelter of Krishna as opposed to run, and that's what the false ego will tend to do, to regroup itself around the mind and criticize. That's what the false ego will tend to do. And after, if we surrender, saying, "This is Krishna teaching me something," then it feels good. After. Because all of us are tiny, insignificant, fallen, bluffers. So one of the services of a guru is to expose the bluff. Not pleasant. That's the cracking of the false ego. One other way to do it is to have if we don't have that kind of relationship with our guru, we have an order from him if we're fortunate. And just by following that order and being determined to follow it, then that same business will happen. If we're focused on the order, the same cracking of the false ego, because an establishment in the real ego of being a servant, a guru, that will happen. Anyway, it's a big question, and it's a maybe somewhat complicated, but yes. Okay, why don't we end now? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Go Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Matsya Avatar ki jai, Satyabhata Muni ki jai.